I learned an important life lesson during the calendar year 2012. Let me take a moment and tell you about that lesson. You see, for the majority of my life, I was much closer to my mother than I was to my father. And because of that, I grew up hearing stories about my family and its history from her perspective. Well, in 2012, my mother became incapacitated. So when I made my regular phone calls home each week, I could no longer talk to her. I was forced to talk exclusively to my father. That was true for the rest of 2012 and for the final 4 years of his life as well. And in those 4 years, I noticed something powerful. While my father and I often talked about the very same issues and experiences that I had talked about with my mother, the sense of perspective had shifted. Suddenly, the same tired old stories that I'd heard a million times before came alive, all because I heard those stories from a new and a different perspective. Well, the same thing often happens when we hear the foundational stories of our faith. For dozens and dozens and dozens of generations, when people heard the passage read that you'll be hearing shortly, it was referred to as the story of Jacob and Laban. Well, this morning I want to do something a little different with you. I want to challenge you to listen to the story from a different perspective, not that of Jacob or Laban, but from the perspectives of Leah and Rachel. And after you hear the women's story, then let's come back together and see if that shift in perspective brought about any new insight. Genesis chapter 29, verses 15 through 28, as read from the Common English Bible. Laban said to Jacob, "You shouldn't have to work for free just because you are my relative. Tell me what you would like to be paid." Now, Laban had two daughters. The older was named Leah, and the younger Rachel. Leah had delicate eyes, but Rachel had a beautiful figure and was good-looking. Jacob loved Rachel and said, "I will work for you for 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." Laban said, "I'd rather give her to you than to another man, so stay with me." Jacob worked for Rachel for 7 years, but it seemed like just a few days because he loved her. Jacob said to Laban, "The time has come. Give me my wife so that I may sleep with her." So Laban invited all the people of that place and prepared a banquet. However, in the evening, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he slept with her. Laban had given his servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah as her servant. In the morning, there she was, Leah. Jacob said to Laban, "What have you done to me? Didn't I work for you to have Rachel? Why did you betray me?" Laban said, "Where we live, we don't give the younger woman before the oldest. Complete the celebratory week with this woman. Then I will give you this other woman too for your work, if you work for me 7 more years. So that is what Jacob did. He completed the celebratory week with this woman, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. Thus ends the reading. Did you notice anything different about the story when you shifted from hearing it as the story of Jacob and Laban to hearing it as the story of Leah and Rachel? Well, there are a couple things that jumped out to me, especially in reading a commentary an Old Testament professor from New Brunswick Theological Seminary wrote, a woman by the name of Beth Tanner. The first thing that you notice if you hear the story from the perspective of Leah and Rachel is that the women are completely silent. For not only do the women not speak, they are treated as if they were nothing more than property, forced to endure the indignity of marrying the same man and competing for his favor in the birthing of the children, Tanner wrote. And the second thing you notice is a painful message that has been communicated to women for countless generations. Rachel was considered better or preferable to Jacob because she was what? Prettier than her sister Leah. If you look at the story from the perspective of the women, rather than the men, you are left to wrestle with an important question, Tanner says. For in a story where women are silent and treated as little more than property, where their value is driven by their looks, where, Beth Tanner asks, where is the gospel message? Well, here is where the work of one of my colleagues, a woman by the name of Mary Austin, came in handy. In suggesting ways that we could dig into this morning's story and find evidence of the gospel message, Mary made a powerful suggestion. She said that the story, when read through the perspective of Leah and Rachel, gives us a chance to, and I quote, look at how God's story develops in ways both visible, i.e. Jacob and Laban, and invisible, i.e. Leah and Rachel. A chance to see how God is at work through people who speak up and people who are seldom heard through the lives of the bold and the silent. This week I got a powerful example of that gospel message in the events that unfolded back in Washington, D.C. Now, while most of the mainstream press's attention was focused on the role that two very visible men played in charting the moral course of the nation, Senators John McCain and Mitch McConnell, some might say the modern versions of Jacob and Laban, there was someone in the background of those events who, much like Lee and Rachel, played a powerful role in how things turned out. Let me tell you a little bit about this person, whose name is Maisie. Maisie was born in a rural district of Japan back in November of 1947, just 2 years after the atomic bombs were dropped in Japan. She came into a family that had challenges of its own, for her father was a compulsive gambler and an alcoholic. After years of enduring abuse, Maisie's mother finally left her father when Maisie was just 4 years old. And when Maisie turned 8, the single mom took 2 of her 3 children and headed out for a new life in the territory of Hawaii. You might have thought their lives improved after the move, right? Well, it didn't. For Maisie's mom struggled to provide for her children. The 3 family members lived in a single room where they shared 1 table, 1 bed, and 3 chairs. Maisie's mom was incredibly tough, though. And despite their financial struggles, Maisie's mom made sure that she and her brother got an allowance of at least a dime a week. Her brother always spent his immediately, but not Maisie. She saved every dime, savoring them and dreaming of what they might become one day in the future. Well, one day, Maisie remembered coming home and picking up that piggy bank, expecting it to empty it and count the dimes like she always did, when she found that piggy bank empty. Her mom could barely pay the bills that month, so she had raided Maisie's bank in order to buy food for the family. Now, if ever there was a person on this planet who society said should have been invisible, it was Maisie. But she wasn't. For just as God used Leah and Rachel and their 2 female servants, Bilhah and Zilpah, to produce children who would grow one day to become the 12 founding sons of Israel, so too was God about to do powerful things through Maisie. When Maisie was 12, she became a naturalized citizen of Hawaii. It just so happened to be the same year that Hawaii became a state. And Maisie worked hard in school. After graduating from Kamuki High School in Honolulu, She then went on to earn a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Hawaii at Manoa and a law degree at Georgetown. Following her graduation from Georgetown, she went back home and became, among other things, a member of the State House of Representatives for 13 years, the Lieutenant Governor of Hawaii for 8 years, a Congresswoman from Hawaii for 6 years, and a United States Senator for the past 4. In the year 2013, she became Hawaii's first female senator. She became the United States' first Asian American female senator, the first U.S. senator born in Japan, and the first U.S. senator to be a Buddhist. And yet, despite all of those achievements, Mazie was largely invisible to most Americans who lived in the mainland. That is, until a little after midnight this past Friday morning. For as the United States Senate was debating a crucial health care decision, Mazie got recognized by the speaker and then took the floor. This immigrant, this woman, this person of color, and she brought into the debate a sense of perspective that no other U.S. senator could bring. She talked first about being born not in a hospital, but at home in a rural district of a foreign land. She then talked about what it was like to have her 2-year-old sister die at home from pneumonia, simply because her parents couldn't afford to get her sister care at a hospital. She then talked about what it was like watching her single mother go to work each day as a child, terrified that if her mom got sick or had an accident at work, that she and her brothers were doomed. And then she talked about what it was like to have a doctor tell her just 2.5 months ago that she had stage 4 kidney cancer and that she would need access to the best medical treatment if she hoped to survive. And as she closed her time on the floor that evening, this amazing, yet all too often overlooked U.S. senator closed with these words, reflecting on her experience since being diagnosed with cancer. "I heard from so many colleagues," she said, "who wrote me wonderful notes, sharing with me their own experience with major illness in their family or with their loved ones. You showed me care. You showed me your compassion. So tonight I ask you, where is that compassion?" It was a turning point in the whole debate. And while the men that day, such as Senators McCain and McConnell, may have got the bulk of the attention in the ensuing days, once again, it was a woman, a daughter of Leah and Rachel, who made the difference. So, what lesson can we women and men draw from today's story from Genesis? Well, many, but one of them is this. You see, God has a habit of using those of us who society would otherwise overlook to do amazing things. Think about it. God used Leah, the one who was considered by some to be less attractive and less valuable. God used her to give birth to Judah and the lineage of Jesus. And God used Mazie, an immigrant woman of color, to speak to the powers that be and help them find their way back to compassion in a moment that touched and changed the lives of at least 16 million Americans. So, if God can do such amazing things against all odds with those who would otherwise be overlooked, what on earth might God do through you? That, my friends, is the question that I'll leave you to answer this week and every week. Amen.